Do you know what it takes to set up a business selling crickets to be ground into flour in the state of Utah? Or one that sells cat litter made from tofu in Hawaii? Yeah, me either. But someone does, and that someone is today's sponsor, Northwest Registered Agent. They can answer all your questions, from what licenses you need to turn bugs into food, or how to set up an LLC for your yarn dyeing business. Whatever weird, wonderful, slightly unhinged thing you're trying to sell, these are your people. Northwest Registered Agent has been helping small business owners and entrepreneurs launch and grow businesses for nearly 30 years. They are the largest registered agent and LLC service in the United States, with over 1,500 corporate guides, real people who know your local laws and can help you and your business every step of the way. Don't pay hundreds or thousands of dollars for what you can get from Northwest for free. Visit northwestregisteredagent.com/happensfree and start using free resources to build something amazing. Get more with Northwest Registered Agent at northwestregisteredagent.com/happensfree. I wrote an entire book called This Day in History for Kids, 365 days, 365 stories. I dug up something for every single one of them. So yes, I can confidently tell you that on November 30th, 1954, a woman in Alabama was hit by a small meteorite that crashed through her ceiling while she was napping. She was okay, don't worry. Now, what I cannot tell you under oath is when my next dentist appointment is. That information does not exist in my brain, which is exactly why I am pumped our new sponsor is Skylight Calendar. This all-in-one digital smart calendar syncs seamlessly with Google Calendar, Apple Calendar, Outlook, and more, giving you customizable views for daily, weekly, or monthly planning. You'll be able to manage events, chores, and grocery lists while assigning colors for each of your family members and eliminating excuses of not knowing what they needed to do. Families are better when they're working together. Right now, Skylight is offering our listeners $30 off their 15-inch calendars by going to myskylight.com/success. Go to myskylight.com/success for $30 off your 15-inch calendar. That's myskylight.com/success.
Because I always say you get one per show. You get one. Well, that didn't work, huh? Oh, that was a bad one, huh, guys? You get one of those per show. Because then two, they're going to start wondering why they paid so much money.
Right. Okay.
So I always put one of those. We call it a shit sandwich in the business. And that's where you put, you got two nice pieces of bread. You got two jokes that always work. But in between it, you got a real brand new one. And that could become the bread eventually. It could become something great. But you always pad it around stuff that you know works.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to How Success Happens. I'm Dan Bova, writer and editor at entrepreneur.com. You know, for a lot of comedians, there is the nightmare of chatty people yelling things at you while you're on stage. But today's guest has learned to take those moments and turn them into an art form. Jeff Akuri is a very funny man whose latest special, Nice to Meet You, can be seen on Netflix, and you can likely see him in person on a stage near you as he crisscrosses North America. That's right, Canada. He's coming your way. Look out. Welcome, Jeff.
Thanks for having me.
Great to talk to you. Man, I got to say, watching your videos, like, this probably says more about me than anything, but I get like a heart attack when you start to engage with people in the crowd. I'm like, where is this going to go? He has no idea what this person is going to say. How do you stay so calm?
Yeah. You know, I think going into it, I always have a plan, you know, like if I have an hour long set, I have a plan as to where I might engage the crowd a little bit, but I always have a reason to bring something up. So you're never going to see me like kind of floundering and then going, all right, so what's your story over here? What do you do, man? Like, and trying to find something funny out of it. When the reality is I'll just have a topic. Like, let's say I want to talk about my dog. I have a series of like four or five jokes of a bit about my dog. And I'll ask people about their dogs and then I'll engage about them. Like, oh, my wife wants a cat. There's cat people. There's dog people. I'm getting a kind of just keeping the crowd keeping them knowing that there's, you know, they could be called on at any time. I remember growing up, the classes I paid attention to the most were the classes where the teacher was randomly be like, and what do you think about that, Kevin? Or what about you, Jessica? And you're just like always on trying to pay attention to be ready for whatever might happen. And it creates an alertness, but also the bottom line is just being friendly.
Yeah.
As long as I'm coming in with a friendly attitude, I have no reason to be scared. You know, yeah, I have no reason to be nervous when there are times, and it still gets a laugh where if I'm just being nice to somebody talking and then they, you know, they kind of, they clam up or that whatever happens where it's not funny, it's not going to work out. I'll be like, okay, thank you. This probably is going to work out. So I'm going to go over there now. Okay. And that'll happen. And then I can do that usually maybe two times max at three. If I'm doing an hour long set where, you know, if it happens four or five times, you got a problem at that point. You got to stop dipping into the crowd, but
right.
People, they respect it. Yeah.
Yeah, no, that's great. And so when you're in like a bit that you've written and you've told before, is your brain like working in the background, like looking into the crowd?
Yeah, no, I'm not really looking into the crowd, but I am like, I will say sometimes when I bring up something, let's say with an audience member, I find out they go, we're actually pregnant right now, or we just had a baby, whatever it may be. I find that out from them. I'll go into my Rolodex of like, all right, I have jokes about my sister had a baby a couple years ago. I have jokes about that. I wrote me and my wife were going through baby. Shoot. Okay. What about the thing about circumcision? That could be kind of funny. And I'm doing that where I'm going now, how can I get them to bring up my joke?
Right.
You know,
right.
So I'll be like, and how was the birth? Everything after the birth? All right. You know, is he circumcised? And then they'd be like, you know, yeah, whatever. And I'll be like, okay, I probably shouldn't ask. It's funny though. Cause my sister, so I was just talking to my sister about this, and then now I'm doing a bit, and they don't know that. They just think they're like, wow, he's just talking, you know?
Yeah.
But I'm always trying to find trigger words to go into my own material.
That's awesome. That's like ninja level there. That's amazing. That other thing you brought up, though, the class where the teacher calls on you, again, that's a lot of people's nightmare. You know, you're like staring out the window, and it's like, what do you think, Dan? What? Oh,
yeah. But what if that teacher, what if it was something you were interested in and it was a teacher that was very nice about it. And if you weren't paying attention, they wouldn't make fun of you. They wouldn't, you know, berate you. That's the type of comic I want to be.
Yeah.
Well, and I strive to be as somebody who's, you know, disarming.
Yeah, no. Well, you're certainly that, as the title of your Netflix special, you know, says, nice to meet you. What people that you grew up with, speaking of school, like, would people be amazed at, like, wow, he became a comedian? Or is it just like, of course he became a comedian?
Surprise would be the consensus.
Really? Okay.
Yeah. I was a pretty quiet kid, pretty reserved. I found humor in like, humor was my way of, you know, if you're going to say something, make it worth it. You know? And so that the only way to make something worth hearing is making it funny. And so the times I would speak, I would have something funny to say. So there was that, but the shyness level of it is what people would be surprised by, is that I'm on a stage.
So when do you remember the first time you, well, either stepped on stage or got paid to step on stage?
I remember like my first New York paycheck for comedy. I would say get paid is like, there's like varying levels of that. You know, some people don't even say you can't call yourself a comedian until you do a certain thing, but like until you get paid to do it. But I think there were gigs I got paid $5 for. And, you know, that's technically like I got a $5 bill. I'm a working comedian right now, you know? So I don't remember the exact time I got paid the first time, but I do remember the first time on stage. Every comedian remembers their first time on stage. Vividly. I remember vividly the arrogance of thinking I did so well, you know? And then looking back and being like, my God, what were you thinking?
Yeah. Do you have like, did you videotape it? Can you actually watch it, or it lives in your brain?
So there's technically two times I went on stage for the first time. The first time I sold a cell phone to a comedian like a long time ago. And I literally asked him, what do you do? And he told me he's a comedian. And I asked how to get started. And he's like, take this class with my friend Bill Bouchard in Detroit. And I did. I took a comedy class to get used to how to, you know, they teach you move the mic stand. Here's some other people. Like, here are the open mics. And here's what you should do. Make sure you're like shoulders back. You're confident. You know, walk the stage. Like all that stuff. And I don't regret it. I think that was great. But I took that class. And then he called me 3 weeks in of the class. It was a 6-week class. And he's like, hey, we had a spot, a fallout on this comedy competition. would you want to do it? And I was like, sure. When is it? She said Tuesday. It was Sunday at the time. So I ran to Starbucks and I just started writing. I'd never tried any of this stuff out loud. I'm going to go try and do stand-up comedy with in front of a real crowd. There was a good like 150 people there. And I remember I got a couple laughs. I had a joke about like growing up Italian, you only speak in vowels, like, hey, oh, you know? And like, I remember that feeling of like, wow, I made people go, ha, like even just that. And I was hooked. I was so instantly hooked. And I even waited to see if I got like placed in the competition. I was like, maybe the first time ever, maybe they're going to be like, you're number one, dude. And I remember, not even placing, but I remember telling people I got fourth for like 2 years. I don't know why, because there's no way I look that up, you know? There's no. So I was like, yeah, I pretty much placed fourth my first time ever. Yeah.
That is fantastic. So you're bit by the bug. This is what you want to do. Did you give yourself any kind of time frame? Like, hey, I got to be paying my bills by this point? Or did you just kind of see what happened?
Never. I mean, you know, that's a very healthy thing to do and a secure thing to do. You know, but I would say if you're a comedian and you have no children and no no familial responsibilities like that, don't put a time frame on it, dude. You have to just be okay with struggling, like financially. Like you can't. I've met comics that have been that way. Where like, well, I need to have, you know, in unit AC or in unit laundry, and I need to have this nice house. I'm sorry, I'm just used to that. And I'll be like, well, that's gonna cripple you in the long run. Because that's going to be a priority for you to maintain a certain lifestyle. When I've gone from living in a nice apartment with one guy to living in a basement with rats with five other guys, and I was getting more successful, and I'm like, I don't know how this is happening, but it never mattered to me, because I knew in the long run, like, it'll be fine. I'll find a way to, I know I'm okay at this, and I'll find a way to make this work, because I love it so much that I'd rather live in a basement filled with rats doing stand up than living in a high rise being an accountant, you know?
Yeah, like
it's a matter of love of the game.
Yeah. That's amazing. So can you for people who aren't familiar with what the early years of a comedian's life is like, I mean, living in the basement with rats, got it. But
yeah. No, that was like 4 years ago.
So I was
well into my 30s at that point.
That's pretty amazing, you know, to go from that to Netflix special. Can you talk about like, you know, what that is like day in and day out when you're like starting to trying to make a name for yourself, what the work you got to put into that?
It's so much work, but it was never like, all right, man, two more years and I'll have, there's no like timeline. That's what I think is so difficult about a comedy career is there is no, do this for a certain amount of time, you're guaranteed this. Do this, you're guaranteed this. You're not guaranteed anything, because if nobody likes you in terms of audience, you're not going to do this job.
Right.
You know, you can become a doctor if you just remember enough things, you know, right, and study hard enough.
Yeah.
But you cannot become a comedian unless you can be funny. So I would say like the early years is just a lot of like, it's funny, I look back at how miserable my situation was, but how happy I was, you know?
Yeah.
Like, I remember I did gigs in Denver with my friend, and we kept having to change hotels because we needed the cheapest motels possible. Like, we had $100 total per budget per night. And so we'd have to check out, and we would carry our bags with us around Denver and like catch a bus to the next town or whatever it was till we found another hotel. And I'm like, oh, we're living like homeless people for like 2 weeks. And we didn't realize that that's basically what that was. And then I stayed, and then I realized, oh, if I fly back, I have a college gig that's going to pay $2,000. And that's my rent for the next 2 months. And I got paid and I flew back at like with not any sleep. And looking back on it now, I'm like, that would be miserable. If I get middle seat now, my weekend would be worse.
Talk a little bit, if you could, about finding your voice. And were there moments where you like sort of took a risk on something new, and did that give you palpitations, or were you always willing to just go up there, try something new? If it works, it works. If it doesn't, it doesn't.
Yeah. I mean, as long as it's funny, I have no fears of it. I'm not up there making political stances. I'm not up there doing things anything that would be divisive, not because I'm avoiding division, but just because nothing I bring up that I want to talk about is going to be that divisive. It's going to be that black and white. Like I like talking about me. I like talking about foibles and things like that, that things that make me laugh. So I'm never fearful of bringing, but I have, because I always say you get one per show, you get one. Well, that didn't work, huh? Oh, that was a bad one, huh, guys? You get one of those per show. Because then two, they're going to start wondering why they paid so much money.
Right. Okay.
So I always put one of those. We call it a shit sandwich in the business. And that's where you put, you got two nice pieces of bread. You got two jokes that always work. But in between it, you got a real brand new one. And that could become the bread eventually. It could become something great. But you always pad it around stuff that you know works.
That's great. Well, I've talked to a number of comedians on the show, and everyone seems to take a real joy in telling me about just not a shit sandwich, but a shit meal, like the gig that went terribly wrong.
Oh, sure.
You got a good one for us?
Oh, man. I always got a bunch. I would say cruise ships was tested my mettle a little bit. Okay. That tested me a little bit, and it was more in a good way where I do feel like I learned. Mm. You know, I am a comic that I have blamed the audience in the past, but I also blame myself. I'm never going 100% blaming the audience. I always try and know, like, hey, it's you still got to learn from stuff. And I remember I was working a cruise ship, and it was a Carnival cruise, and the demographic was pretty split. It was pretty black and white. It was the demographic pretty split down the middle. And they had me and another black comedian, and we were doing our PG show. And sometimes due to scheduling, it was not ideal, but they had his show at 7 and mine at 7:30. And so he was just going to kind of piggyback and be like, and then now your other comedian, and then they'll just, stay there. The problem was,
Abercrombie knows denim better than anyone. Their relaxed jean was made for everyday plans, while their baggy jean comes through for the days you need something different. Plus, they've got their original classic fits and athletic fits for guys who want a little more room in the fire and seat. Shop Abercrombie denim and more in the app, online, and in stores.
The black people really wanted to see him, They were really looking forward to his set. And I noticed when I was waiting before I went up that there was a line out the door of all the white people that were coming to my show, but couldn't because his show was full of all the black people. He crushed so hard. He closed doing an impression of what if a black woman from church sang the national anthem, and it was just an exaggerated, like, oh, say, I said, oh, say, hilarious. People are getting up and laughing and just hooting and hollering. And then he closes, and I'm like, no, he's not ending. No. And he goes, all right, we got another comedian, you guys. He's a young buck. I want you all to give him a chance. And I'm like, don't do that. Don't make it look like I won a contest. And he goes, give him a chance. And he goes, Jeff Curry. And I just get up. And I go, damn, I go, he stole my joke. That's what I was going to open with. Got nothing. And then I just remember, like, watching this exodus and then just white people going, is this open now? Thank you so much. And then taking the seats. And then just the first 10 minutes was staff change. And it was, I just remember, like, you're sitting there going, it's good money, Jeff. It's good money. And yeah.
Oh my God, that is incredible. So, so talk to us about you. You obviously you work your way up from the basement with the rats. You've got a Netflix special. Like, what does that mean? What's the road to that? Tell us all about that.
So, I was kind of content without having to do a special. I was happy with my hour on the road. I was proud of what I was doing. And I was happy with my turnouts. I was getting a lot of people coming based off of my crowd work, which I was, getting from the road. So it was a self-feeding machine. And I got offers from places to do a special, and none of it like intrigued me in a way where I just told my agent, my team, I said, hey, I want Netflix. That's what I want to wait for. So when we, I'll wait another year. I'd rather wait another 2 years and do that. And then within a year, they reached out. I think my team had some good juggling with like, hey, look at what he's doing. Like they did all that stuff. And they, and then Netflix offered me the special, back in February, March. And most of the jokes were written from that point forward. So it was only about 8 months I wrote most of those jokes because my wife was diagnosed in February. And then within a month, they asked me to start the special. So everything about her, pretty much halfway through the special and forward, it's all like brand new. And so it's kind of fun that it's like, it's not overcooked, the material. I'm not like just reciting it because I know it works. It's something that's still very personal. That was the only downside was like, I'm still writing about it. I can still add tags, you know? And so I was almost disappointed, but I'm like, I can't not talk about this in my special. It's whatever I'm talking about right now needs to be recorded right now. So that's how that kind of came about was I wasn't in a hurry for anything. And so once I knew Netflix and I really wanted it to just be I wanted a good representation of what it's like to see me live because the live show, I don't want someone, if somebody watched it and said, wow, that was funny. I don't want to go to any shows, but that was funny. I enjoyed that. I liked his work. That's not successful to me. Mm-hmm. What I want is somebody to go, I want to come see him live because that's what the real show is. If my real product is the thing you have to go and get, that's what I want you to go and get. So whatever I can get you to, because the vibe of the in the room experience is amazing. I'm not just saying like I'm trying to get them to buy tickets. I truly mean that. Yeah. I want them to experience that, but in person, you know?
Yeah.
So that's the goal. I some people say like, oh, so what now? Your own TV show? And I'm like, no, I want to live my dream. This is what I've been trying to do this whole time. Right. So I kind of want to enjoy this for now, you know?
Yeah, no, it's amazing. And you speak a lot about Katie. How is she doing?
She's doing well. You know, we're still figuring things out. She's amazing with how well she's handling everything. The amount of things she has to do for herself and for us. It still amazes me. And I'm just really proud of how she's doing for herself. Yeah.
Yeah. That's amazing. And obviously all our positive energy, being sent to you and her. Do you guys talk about, you know, with Katie or with anyone in your life, like this is off limits and this isn't, or do you have like carte blanche? They trust you, Jeff, say what you're going to say.
She trusts me. She knows I would never say anything that would besmirch her in a way that's not like tongue in cheek. You know, I've fabricated a couple things just to exaggerate her angle because it's funnier if it's maybe a little more amplified, things like that. But I've never like, I would never be like, oh my God, when you farted yesterday, which she doesn't. I don't know why I just said that. That's not a good idea. I don't know why I did that. I apologize. She's home. I hope she didn't hear that. If you're home, give me a fart. All right. She's gonna kill me. So I would never like do that because I'd be like, what? I'd be a human being. You have to be a husband first a little bit, but there's nothing that's not like she has to remind me oftentimes when her and I have a funny interaction. She'll be like, you should write that down because that's a good point you made against me or whatever it is. She has no pride when it comes to that. No.
Yeah. That's great. So as you have come up, are you hearing from people that you've admired over the years? Are you interacting with comedy legends that maybe you never thought you would talk to?
Yeah, I'm getting to do a lot of cool things and I'm really excited about it. Like it's one of those things where you just assume no one's going to like you. You know, I know crowd work is a thing that isn't always revered or whatever. But I want it like, it's just nice to feel like, oh, okay. Cause I feel like some people don't like me and then I meet them and they're like, great special, by the way. And oh, we haven't worked together, blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, why did I think they didn't like me? There's no reason for them not to like me. And I'm getting a lot of that. Like I'm getting a lot of people that I was like, oh, they wouldn't respect my comedy. And they've hit me up and been like, I love the special or whatever it is, which when a comedian tells you they watch the special, that's huge. Cause it's a lot of comics avoid it naturally.
So what you gave a lot of advice to up-and-comers. I love your specific advice on social media, because I do hear a lot people talking about, like, I don't want to put my jokes up there because then, like, my joke is gone. But you put a ton of stuff up. So how has that worked for you?
Yeah, so I put up my crowd work because it's anything that I can't recreate, I would put up. Now, occasionally, I'll have a moment where a joke slides into a crowd work moment, and then I tag back to that crowd work moment using the joke, and I go, all right, it's time to post that joke up. But then I probably won't do that joke live for a few months and maybe repurpose it later on, just because I have people that are coming and they're gonna be like, I heard that one. I don't think there are comedians that are like, they're hiding behind, like, I can't post anything because I don't do crowd work and my jokes are precious. Well, then you need to write more to compensate for that. You need to find another niche. You need to find forward-facing videos. You need to start making sketches. You could maybe start, streaming, whatever it may be, to keep yourself in people's minds in some way, and maybe make them laugh. Making people laugh is a drug. It's giving them dopamine. So I just find a way to do that for people. If you're a funny person, now if you are somebody who's like more of a storyteller and your bits are longer and you have a hard time getting the online recognition, then you have to do something else, or put out a special with that. It's hard, but you have to compensate. You have to adjust to the internet. There is no, hey, if I get into this club, they're gonna get me a network deal, or they're gonna get me this and that anymore. It's all up to you to get into people's brains. And I've often found if you're having fun, it's contagious. If you're, but I've also said, like, to friends of mine that have posted, I'm like, you're throw shit at a wall, man. Some of it's not going to land, but that's fine. At least you're just keeping yourself, out there,
Yeah. It's great advice. Well, Jeff, I'm going to give you a little bit challenge now. We have a lot of viewers of this show and a lot of entrepreneur readers are interested in side hustles. So I'm going to give you 5 side hustles. And I'm going to ask you to force rank them, and you're not going to get them. Okay. You're going to get them one by one. So you got to pick a number and stick with it. So,
okay, this is something I would do, or I would say is a good thing.
You rank it for yourself.
For myself. Okay. Got it.
Okay. So here we go. Number one. Weekend cell phone store manager.
I mean, I did that for like years of my life. Is this what this is? All right. If I had to do this, I mean, are we saying now in my current life? Because I can't do that again, man. I can't go back.
You got to put a number on it, Jeff.
4.
4. Okay. Got it. Okay. It's in the record book. Number 2, Uber driver.
2.
2. Okay. Cruise line buffet server.
5. 5. 9. Put that number 9.
Okay.
Buffet serving specifically. Just me back there. Hey, what's up, guys? I really fucked up.
Okay. Guy selling bootleg Yankees gear in the parking lot.
Oh, shit. What's left? What do we got? 1 and 3?
You got 1 and 3, yeah.
I would say 3. It's too dangerous for me.
Okay. And then finally,
my number one.
This has to be your number one.
My one side hustle. Oh, I'm sticking by it.
So I could say anything now.
Yeah. Okay. No, what's written down?
Well, I'm going to be honest with you. I screwed up and I only wrote 4 down. So...
Wow. Okay. My number one side hustle is a guy that helps you with your podcast.
Perfect. We'll take it. All right. Awesome, Matt. Well, I encourage everyone to watch this special. And if Jeff is coming near you, you're guaranteed to see something that'll only happen that one night. So get your ticket for sure. Jeff, so awesome talking to you, man.
Thank you. You too, man. Thank you very much for having me.